two parents received this email from their daughter who was away at college and just about coming home for Christmas break. So they opened up the email and it said this, "Dear Mom and Dad, I'm sorry I haven't written lately, but you see, all my things were destroyed in the dorm fire. My eyes are almost completely healed now, and there should be no permanent damage from the smoke. While the dorm is being rebuilt, I have moved in with my boyfriend. I think you met Roy when you were here on Parents' Weekend. I know how much you've always wanted grandchildren, so you'll be happy to know I'm expecting a baby at the end of next summer." And then the letter went on and it said, "Please excuse this exercise in English composition. There was no dorm fire. My eyes are not damaged. I'm not living with my boyfriend and I am not pregnant. However, I did receive a D in English and an F in French. And I wanted to be sure you got this information in proper perspective." Now, if you're the parent and you're reading along this letter, and I just imagine how you're feeling as you read more and more is happening in her life, and all of a sudden you realize none of those things have happened. It's a D in English, an F in French. You feel a sense of relief, and you go, "Oh, honey, is that it? We're going to be able to handle that." And it is in the contrast that we're able to see perspective. And perspective is liberating, the ability to use our perspective and use it well. And that's what this lesson is about. Now that you have been exploring a possibility for yourself, a dream, if you have a picture of that dream, an imagination of that dream, just thinking about it, like, quickens your pulse. It matches your core value. You've tested this dream. It is going to cause you to grow. It's good for others. There's so much in this dream that matters. And right behind that will come a sense inside of you like, well, do I really deserve that? Or can I really have that? Or some of the things that we may have picked up along the way about ideas of ourselves as not good enough or somewhat damaged or somehow not having the skill or the talent or the smarts or the contacts or the whatever it is, the age. Most of us have perceptions about ourselves that are limiting and create in us a sense of doubt about the possibilities. So this lesson is about letting go of some of the perceptions that we have that are self-inhibiting and self-limiting. Understanding, first of all, that you are not your personality. You have a personality. You are not your body. You have a body. You are a spiritual being having a human experience. You have a body. You use your brain, which is the switching station between your individual awareness and the mind of God. You have creative capacities that are unlimited except by your own thinking and your own understanding. And just like the parents who got an upsetting letter from their daughter, but when they changed their perception, the truth emerged, everything changed in how they felt and their ability to help their daughter solve whatever the situation was. It's not different with you and me. There's a Hindu story that I really love. It's about a pregnant tiger who goes out hunting one day. She finds a whole herd of goats, and she goes after the goats because she's very, very hungry. She's ravenous. So she attacks them desperately, and she gets so tired and runs so hard that she just collapses in exhaustion, and she dies giving birth to her cub. When the goats return to the field, they find the motherless newborn, and those goats decide to adopt him. So he grows up repeating behaviors like those around him. He bleats. He eats grass. He believes himself to be a goat. So this little cub who grows into a tiger now is wandering with the goats and acting like a goat and bleating like the goats and eating the way the goats eat. And one day, a tiger, a big male tiger, comes into the goat herd, and all the goats scatter except this little tiger. He's about a year old now, and looking at this big male tiger, somehow he's sensing an affinity with this tiger. But he freezes in his tracks, and he stands there staring at the tiger. The big tiger comes over to him and says, "What's wrong with you?" And the little one says, "Well, what do you mean, what's wrong with me?" And the big tiger says, "What's wrong with you? What are you doing? You're acting weird. You're acting like a goat." And the little tiger says, "I am a goat." And the big one says, "No, you're not. You're not a goat." He leads the little tiger over to a pond, a very still pond. He says, "Now look at yourself. Really look at yourself." And the little cub looks at himself and he looks at the big tiger and he's confused. The tiger says, "Come with me, come with me." He takes him back to his den, and in the den there's some leftover meat from a gazelle that had been his recent kill. So he says to the little tiger, "Eat this." The little cub says, "Well, no way, I'm a vegetarian." And the tiger says, try it, just try it. The little tiger reaches over and he takes a bite off the bone. In this Hindu story, when that little tiger who thought he was a goat reaches down and tastes some of the meat, at first he chokes on the meat, he gags, and then a piece of that meat enters his bloodstream. And the cub begins to stretch, he bares his claws, he opens his mouth wide, and he lets out, for the very first time in his life, a small roar. That first roar isn't very fearsome. It's not yet all the roar that the tiger will give, but that first roar is called the roar of awakening. It's the first moment when this being recognizes that he wasn't who he thought himself to be. He wasn't limited to the kind of life he'd been living, and that there was way more for him. So you and I, when we first get introduced to the idea that we are way more than we thought ourselves to be, that we have capacities and creative talents and a genius code in us as unique as our thumbprint, at first we too choke on this information. And we may discard it. We say, no, not me, I'm... And we describe ourselves in the personality we've known. Or we describe ourselves from the viewpoint of those who raised us or taught us or in some way influenced our self-image. But there's something very, very powerful in the shifting of your self-image from a local personality with your history-driven understanding about who you are to a more evolved, conscious, aware understanding of yourself as an evolving being who uses not only your human brain, your body, your emotions, but the mind of God to create. Now, who you are is a divine being. You can create yourself. You can't even make your heart beat. You can't take one breath on your own. It is living spirit in which you live and move and have your being, and that presence, that power, the authentic you is living and moving and having being as you. So in these lessons, we're learning to explore our longings, to pay attention to our discontent as the two streams of information that are guiding us, that send information to our conscious mind about decisions we can make that move us in the direction of the dreams we have. So you pay attention to your longings, you pay attention to your discontent. Those are streams of information to the conscious mind about a direction that leads you into a greater and fuller expanded expression of yourself. For this you came, to bear witness to this incredible being that is the authentic you. And the great news about this is the more you do this, the more I do this, the happier we are, the healthier we become, the easier things get. It's as if we lift into a jet stream of support because we're in harmony with our soul's purpose, who we are meant to be. So we've spent some time listening to our longing, listening to our discontent, paying attention, getting an idea of a dream, testing that dream. We've run that dream by the 5-point test. We noticed our dream, listened to it, paid attention to it, tested it, said, yes, this is a good dream. And as soon as we say yes to the dream, it's in essence that we step beyond the boundary of the life we've known, and now we're in what's called the gap. The gap between the life we've known and the life we have not yet brought in. And traversing that gap is a tricky path. There is almost a gravitational pull to the life we've known. It's already established. We've lived that life. We've come to know that life. And some people call that a comfort zone. Even when it's uncomfortable, at least it's comfortable because we know that life. You set a dream in front of yourself, and you really say yes to that dream. You test that dream. You say, I'm going to live that life. I am going to live that life. What's called your paradigms, or all the ways you thought about yourself, now rise up, and they argue with you about the possibility you really do have to live the greater, larger life. Here's the truth. You do have the capacity. It may not yet be a developed capacity or a known capacity for you, but you do have the capacity. There's not one thing you could think of that's beyond the capacity of the universe to bring forth, and you are one with this universal power, presence, and mind. Now, we call this a sense of deserving, a growing sense of deserving, or a greater and greater self-esteem. Esteem just simply means valuing, how you value yourself, and understanding that you have a self-image that can shift to a higher and greater emergence of authenticity that's in harmony with really who you're created to be. So when you think of the word yourself, if you use a small s to define the self, you can see that yourself and the version you've had perhaps to think of yourself is your personality, your history, what others have said, what you've done so far. And it's not that it's not true, it's just not all of yourself. Yourself, if you take that self and put a capital S, there is a self, there is an authentic self. There is the self that you are before you took this human birth, that you are when you lay this human body down, this self that is the real you. That self has a DNA. It has a divine destiny to express unique talents and skills and gifts that are as unique as your thumbprint in this world. But you will mute that opportunity if you only identify with your history, if you only see yourself based on the conditions you've currently had, known, or experienced. So learning how to shift, in essence, your sense of self becomes part of the great gift that you have in deciding to build a dream. Because remember, building the dream, getting the thing you say you want, building the house, having the family, or whatever it is, creating the business, writing the book, doing the travel, whatever it is that you feel a longing for and a yearning to experience and express, that will be a wonderful thing. But the really wonderful thing is who you become in the process, who you discover yourself to be as you get to know this authentic self. And just like those parents who all of a sudden had a shift in perception, that changed everything in regard to how they were perceiving the situation with their daughter, you and I can have a shift in perception that absolutely changes us. The magnetic field in which we live and move and have our being draws unto us the substance that's coherent with the images we hold. So when you have a bigger idea, you want to be sure that that bigger idea lives inside of you. And there's no dissonance, that you're not saying, yeah, I'd love to have that, but I'm not worthy of it. I'd love to have that, but I don't have the education. I don't have the background. I don't have this or that. And in essence, perhaps you don't currently, but you have access to the mind of the infinite in which all things are possible. So let me give you a few stories to help anchor this idea. There was a woman I knew named Carla. Carla had grown up in a Catholic family. She'd gone to Catholic school. She was a kid who was always in trouble. She always asked a lot of questions and irritated her teachers, who were nuns. She said one day in the fifth grade, her nun teacher, the teacher, just absolutely lost her temper, took the little 10-year-old in front of the entire class and said, there were 26 other kids in the classroom, by the way, and the nun said, all right, what you're all going to do now is one by one, I want you to stand up, and I want you to name something about Carla that you don't like. And we're going to all tell Carla what's wrong with her. And Carla told me that as a 10-year-old, I mean, she just remembers standing in this classroom with one student after another telling her what was wrong with her, from the way she looked, to the way she acted, to the way she dressed, to the beliefs she held, to some of what she considered to be some of the most good things about herself, and maybe even some of the deepest secrets she had that only her dearest friends would know. But in the presence of this authority figure, the nun, one by one, the students did exactly as they'd been asked to do. They stood up and they told Carla things that really hurt Carla's feelings. In the authority figure of this nun, somehow in this little girl's mind, she translated that to mean God was saying these things about her. And as time went on, Carla shut down. She began to hate herself. If everyone else saw her this way, that must be how she was. And so in junior high, then she began to seek out a cure for her pain. She found it in drugs and alcohol. She drank herself well into her 20s. And then having 15 years of drinking and drugging, she finally became very ill, and at the threat of losing her life, she finally got into recovery. She said that in the recovery process, she began to realize that she was recovering a new sense of identity, that her true identity was not at all what she had come to believe on that fateful day when she was a 10-year-old. She saw that the nun was just upset that day, that maybe she was being irritating to that nun, that maybe she was asking too many questions. Certainly the nun had acted, you know, in a way that was misguided, but she'd had a tough day. But also Carla came to see that nun was not God, nor were all the comments that were made that day the definition of her true self. The nun was just a person who got frustrated with a child one day and did something. But that child had taken that information, much like the parents who took the information that their college daughter was temporarily blind and very much pregnant. She had a mental response, an emotional response, and a physical response. All of Carla's choices from then forward had been based on what she had come to believe about herself by that one experience. And the information she had been given was very, very wrong. So in recovering her true identity, Carla began to realize that she had a divine nature, that it didn't mean that she didn't have amends to make or things to make right about the life she'd lived, but it meant that she was not defined by those ideas about herself, nor was she defined by the behaviors that she had done to try to mitigate the pain she felt. And she began to recognize that there was something in her that was worth way, way more than she'd had any idea of. So as we learn, each one of us, in this process, in dream building, in learning to bring forth your goals, your ideas, your talents, your skills, for you to move into a more expanded and expanding version of life that's calling you, one of the practices, and it's a practice over time, is to learn to believe in yourself in a different way, into believing really who you are, that you are not what you've done, you are not what you've had happen to you, you are way more than that. And when we first hear these ideas and we first really begin to taste the idea that I've had experiences, I have a body, I've had things happen, I've done things, that's history, it's feedback, it's information, but it's not who I am. Most of us choke on that. We choke on that idea, but wait a minute, because we've come to only see ourselves through the lens of our history and our experiences. But once we begin to let this get into our bloodstream a bit, we will find ourselves in a kind of roar of awakening that absolutely transforms us as well. There's a story about eight buddies who go golfing one day, and they break up into two foursomes. The first foursome gets done, and they wait for the other group. They're sitting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and finally, maybe an hour and a half after they have expected, the second group struggles in. And the guy in the first group says, "My gosh, what took you guys so long?" And a fellow from the second group says, "Oh man, it was a tough game." The other said, "Well, why?" The other one says, "Well, on the second hole, Harry had a heart attack." And they said, "Oh my gosh, that's horrible. What happened?" The other one says, "Well, after that, it was hit the ball and drag Harry, hit the ball and drag Harry." Now, it's kind of a bad joke. Take it in a broader spectrum of that joke. I mean, poor Harry. But the idea is that we would laugh at anyone who would try to play the game of golf dragging something that heavy with them. Yet, you and I are often playing the game of life dragging our own, quote, Harry with us, dragging something that no longer is alive, life-giving, or having meaning in our lives. Quite simply, Harry is the dead weight. And there are parts of ourselves that we have long since needed to discard. They've died, but we're still hanging on. Experiences, ideas, happenings. We're still dragging perhaps our childhood story, still hauling around what our spouse did yesterday or 10 years ago, or a different spouse. We're lugging around the notion that we're not lovable or not smart enough or not something. We're still dragging around limiting ideas. And it's heavy and it's exhausting. And what we find is there's no energy left for dream building. There was a couple that I met once, and in working with them, the man's name was Brad. And he said, "You know, most people would say that I was an easygoing guy, but my family would not say that, because there's a whole side of me that they see that only comes out with those who are nearest and dearest to me. And it's a part of me that I think aptly they've called, and they've probably given me the right name for it, they call it the werewolf. You know, things can be just be going along okay, and then I'll get stuck in traffic, or I'll come home and see a bike out in the driveway where I wanted to park, and or I trip over something inside of the house, and instantly, I'll just be filled with a rage, and I'll just dump that on anyone and everyone who's around. And the kids will go, 'Oh no, Dad, the werewolf is here. Dad, the werewolf is here.'" So Brad decided he wanted to change that, that instead of having the people that were closest to him be the recipients of the darkest side of him, he wanted to discover what it was that he could do that would liberate him. In essence, this was a Harry he'd been dragging around, a learned style of behavior that created pain with the closest people he had in his life. So he began to practice an exercise where he would, in essence, push a pause button When that behavior would begin to surface up in him, he recognized he could actually push the pause button and consciously choose how he would respond. That he could decide, you know, I can still get angry about this and I can still do whatever, that option doesn't leave me. But for the next 15 minutes or the next 5 minutes or the next, and it took him a while to exercise his capacity to choose how he would respond instead of just reacting, to choose to respond. Now, in essence, you've heard the word responsibility. We all have the ability to choose how we will respond. But most of us have been trained to be reactive. So we were trained how we should respond by the way we watched our parents respond or react. And once it's programmed, it becomes a reaction. We don't even think about it. We just think that you spill some milk, you get upset. Somebody cuts you out in traffic, you get upset. That you have a patterned response that is unconscious now, and so we call that a reaction, because it's no longer consciously choosing how we're going to respond. We just react a pattern that's always been established somewhere along in our learning. But it's not liberating. And why it matters in dream building, why it matters in creating the life that you want, is that you want to be able to harness your whole authority. Your authority is a co-creator with the infinite. So as you begin to recognize that you perhaps have some Harrys you've been dragging around, patterns that are no longer really useful, helpful, creative, energizing, and you begin to just take an honest inner inventory and say, you know, that pattern isn't really how I want to be. And basically, that pattern is not harmonious with the life that I say I want to live. That if I want to be more abundant, but I'm acting stingy, if I want to have more love, but I'm holding thoughts of resentment, that anything I'm doing mentally, emotionally, physically, that is dissonant or out of harmony with the picture I'm holding for the life I want to live, that dissonance is like putting two ends of the magnet together. Two positive ends of the magnet repel. So I have to create, in essence, a vibrational match in my way of being with the picture I say I want in my life. So working with some of these ideas around releasing patterns of thinking or behavior that are not in harmony with the image of the life I want to live increases my sense of deserving, opens me up. I now become a vibrational match for ideas and circumstances and situations that actually look like they come out of the blue to support my understanding and the steps I need to take to build the dream I want to have. So Brad realized that there was a part of him that really could choose a different way. That was new information to him. He just didn't know quite how to access that at first. He knew the first part of it was to actually believe that he had more in him than he'd known. Even though he didn't know how to access it yet, he had to make a choice. You know what? I really could choose to be different. So he thought, okay, so what am I going to do with that energy of rage when it starts to come up in me? And I just want to vent it and get it away from me. I want to get angry and vent that energy. You know, so he started thinking about what was most important in his life. He thought about what really mattered most to him. And he knew that it was his family. So instead of going with that energy of bursting out, he thought, I'm going to choose to create this differently. And he thought, you know, if I really were living the life I wanted to live, I would celebrate my family. And as soon as he said the words, celebrate family, even his body would shift because he knew that that was really important to him. So he began to practice that. And he was tested with a werewolf experience not long after he made a decision. He said he was driving home in traffic on the inner lane and his car, which was fairly old, absolutely died. So in the midst of the traffic and waiting for someone to come and help him, he got out of the car and was leaning up against the guardrail watching all the traffic go by, and he said the steam was just rising from the hood of his car. He said if someone could have taken an infrared picture, they would have seen the steam coming out of my ears, my nose, my eyes, and every other place in me where steam could emit. He said, I was just so angry about this, and all of a sudden I thought, wait a minute. I made a decision I could respond differently. I made a decision that it's a matter of perspective. This is a broken down car. That's it. It's a broken down car. It can't control my life unless I let it. It's a broken down car. And then he remembered, I have a great family. I have a broken down car, but I have a great family. Not long after that, a policeman stopped and they called a tow truck. The tow truck driver looked inside and the engine was like completely frozen. So the tow truck driver says, you know, where do you want me to take your car? And Brad said, take it to a junkyard. So he had the car towed away. The policeman gave him a ride to the next exit because he could catch a bus from there. He was standing there waiting for the bus, and he thought, okay, how am I going to go home now? And this was outside his experience. His pattern of experience was always to be mad, stomp around, vent when something like this had happened in his life. So he thought, okay, so there's a part of me that is greater than this experience. What I really want to do is remember that I have a great family. I have a dead car, but I have a great family. And all of a sudden, he got this idea, because right next to where he was standing waiting for the bus was a 7-Eleven. So he went into the 7-Eleven store, and he bought a bottle of sparkling apple cider. He picked up a bouquet of wildflowers a vendor was selling outside the store. He took the flowers, the bottle of apple cider, carried it on the bus, walked almost a mile to his house after the bus dropped him off, came in the door. The family looked at him. His wife says, What's this? And he says, guess what? The car's dead, we have no money, but I love you all. And he said their jaws dropped, and they was like, who are you and what did you do with Dad? And he was so empowering to him. Now, you know, it's a small story in some regards, but it was a big story in Brad's life because it was a defining moment. That moment defined Brad's recognition that there was a choice in him about how he would respond, and that he was no longer limited to the personality or the person he had known himself to be. That was a roar of awakening. And that roar of awakening, when you discover that there is more to you, that you have more than you, the life you've lived, the experiences you've tended to react to, you have more. That more puts you in touch with a stream of more. More ideas, more understanding, more availability. All of that is in coherency with you becoming the person who absolutely can live the dream you're holding. So you know our little tiger? The other tiger could look at that tiger all day long and say, you're not a goat, you're not a goat, you're a tiger. But until that little tiger begins to resonate with that himself and taste the meat himself, there's no roar of awakening. So someone else, I can tell you that I know you're worthy of your dream. I can tell you that I know there is more to you. I can tell you because I've had 40 years working in this laboratory called life, working with thousands and thousands of people. And I know that about you. But it really doesn't do you much good for me to know that about you. It's you tasting it. It's you being open to do the experiences that we're talking about, to work in your workbook, to begin to take just baby steps. And I'll tell you this, and you know it's true, that baby steps taken sequentially and consistently will ultimately even take you up Mount Everest. So there's nothing that's ever happened in your life that's beyond the power that's within you to transform that and ultimately use that for your good. So Brad made a shift by being willing to focus on his own deserving at a deeper level. And then he began to practice that new understanding in regard to old behaviors. There's a man I know named Scott. Now, Scott and I have known each other for a long time. During the Vietnam days, Scott had a strong feeling that he just did not want to be involved in participating in any actions that brought physical violence to anybody else. So he filed as a conscientious objector during the Vietnam War. His first filing was rejected, and then in the course of his appeals, the war ended. So his friends started coming home. Some of them that he'd gone to high school with had lost limbs. Many of them had lost whole portions of their heart. They just really felt disillusioned and disheartened. But having gone off, surrendered their own innocence, only to have society reject them when they came home. You know, and Scott said later, he would talk to me about it. He said, I was feeling like here I was. I sat at home being a paper pusher trying to get out of it. He said that he began to build inside himself a feeling that he did not deserve good things in his life. Others had been willing to sacrifice, and he had not. As he grew older, he became a successful businessman, but he noticed that he wasn't really able to give of his heart in any of his relationships. You know, he had money, but he felt disconnected. He felt isolated. He had a wife. He had kids, but he didn't feel connected. And what we notice is that for some of us, our lack of deserving will really affect our financial affairs. For some of us, our lack of deserving affects our relationships, and sometimes it affects our health as well. So wherever it's showing up in your life, know this, that it is a disconnect from the authentic self. So Scott began to practice, again, spiritual principles. He began to practice a different kind of thinking. He began to practice recognizing that there was more to him than he had known. And Scott began to develop a personal companionship or relationship with a sense of his own higher power. And he began to practice recognizing that there is more to me than I've known. You know, and I did the best I knew how at that time. And he went back and he, in essence, took a look at the Harry he'd been dragging, which was, my friends went off and sacrificed, I didn't go off and sacrifice. But he went back to the moment when he made the decision to be a conscientious objector, and he knew that at that moment he really was doing what he thought was right. And it isn't that he didn't want to serve his country, he just didn't want to be involved in physical violence causing harm to someone else, and he really believed that. And he began to repattern his understanding about that Harry he'd been dragging all those years. He said, so how am I going to break free from this? How do I step into a state of really feeling my own deserving? So he began to notice that he had some invitations to be in service. And Scott discovered that the more he was in service, the better he felt about himself. He'd always felt better when he was giving because he had seen that, you know, while he wanted to be a conscious objector, He never meant that he didn't want to serve his country. He just didn't know how. So he'd been doing service work off and on throughout the years. He was president of a contractor's organization, and he said that when he received that title, he prayed, under my presidency, let me do something that is significant for my community. And he said within a week, someone called him and told him about a group of Vietnam veterans who wanted to build a Vietnam memorial to the vets in Oregon who had lost their lives. The group didn't have much money and was looking for someone to help. There was a lot of construction and paving of the road that would be needed, and could Scott's group help? Well, Scott said, could it have been more of a divine fit? In answer to his silent prayer, asking the universe to support him in building a deeper believing in himself that he would also do something good for the community, it just seemed like such a terrific fit for him. So he became a spokesperson to the other contractors about giving time and talent and resources and dollars to this project. And under Scott's presidency, the Vietnam War Memorial was built for the state of Oregon. As it was nearing completion, Scott knew that he needed to do one more thing. So he gathered with a group of the vets who were planning the dedication. They were celebrating Scott and saying what a great guy he was, slapping him on the back, saying, you know, we're so grateful for you. And he said he just felt this lump coming up in his throat, and he knew that he had to speak. And so he said, I need to tell you my story. And he went ahead and he told the others gathered, who were all Vietnam vets, some without limbs, many who had lost friends and buddies during the war. It has been such a burden that I've carried. I've not found a way to contribute, and I wanted to honor the way you did contribute, which was right for you. And I still wanted to find a way to contribute myself. He said that he expected perhaps rejection or disdain for some of them, but that is not at all what he got. What he received was acceptance, and through many, many tears that were shared that day, he said it was a true cleansing for him. On the day of the dedication, Scott said that he stood there and he realized that he had asked for a way to heal his past. The universe had responded equally with a wondrous way that he could use his skills and talents to give back. And this was an authentic, new, deeper understanding of Scott's true deserving that came out of his decision he wanted to have that. You know, so no matter what your Harry is, no matter how heavy the burden you carry or that says you don't deserve, for Scott it was guilt over the war, for Brad, rage over the way he'd been raised, for Carla, the cruelty of a nun, you too can set that weight down and you can discover the truth about yourself. So as you're thinking about this right now, and I don't know what your particular Harry is, but I know you've got one. We all have things that we carry from the past. You don't set Harry down just once. Whatever that Harry is down, and then thoughts of that will come back again. You set it down again and again and again. And that's a practice. But you will find over time, the less you carry Harry, the even when you're tempted to pick him up again, you recognize that, you know, first you're carrying him all day long, then you carry him, you realize you carried him a half a day, then you realize you may have carried him an hour, and then there's the moment when you reach down to pick up Harry and you say, no, I'm no longer carrying that. This no longer has anything to do with me. It's historic. It's informative. I'll take the information and the learning, but I'm not carrying the weight anymore. There is a presence and power that is present in this universe. It is seeking ever freer, fuller, expanded life everywhere present in the universe. It is life itself. Something wonderful is happening with you right now. It is this thing called life and is seeking ever freer, fuller, expanded expression. It will work in you, through you, and as you, if you allow it. We can deepen our sense of deserving, every one of us, by letting Harry go, setting Harry down. Harry is our dead weight, the part of ourselves that we've long since needed to discard. So we may be lugging around the notion that we're not lovable, dragging limiting ideas, like it never works out for me, or whatever those are. But when you're weighted by excess baggage, you haven't the energy to carry to greater possibilities. So don't allow Harry to control your life. You deserve better. So here's an exercise I want you to do to help you unload Harry. You're going to pick up your workbook. You're going to play with some titles. Now, we tend to think that some of the titles we've carried are permanent, but the truth is, all kinds of things change when we change our idea, just as the parents, when they change their idea, oh, it's not this, it's that. All of the experience of that email shifted. Now, imagine some of the old titles. You've read about failed politician Winston Churchill. That was a printing. That was a headline, failed politician Winston Churchill. You know, Bing Crosby was told he was way too off-tune to ever have a success as a singer. There was disco child, John Travolta. You know, every person who has evolved has discarded some of their old titles. And the truth is, no title is permanent. No title we give ourselves or anyone else represents the totality of that individual. And you can shed any title you want to. So in your workbook, you're going to make a list of old deadweight titles that you've carried about yourself on the left side of the column of your workbook. Things you once believed about yourself, possible titles that you might have at one point held on to or carried or someone else gave you. And then you'll notice in your workbook that you're invited to, called to, write some new titles that are coherent, that are compassionate, that are authentic, that are true in terms of you being the person who can deliver and experience and express the dream you're calling forth. So I have in my left-hand column, you know, teen mom. I have in that column, and it isn't that it isn't true, I was a teen mom, but my energy on that being a negative title, I put it there because at one point that was shameful to me. Now, I feel positive about that now, and so I put it in my right column. You can have even some titles in both columns, but the important thing is that columns that are no longer true for you, that are dead weight, that are limiting, put them in your left column and then redesign some titles that are coherent with what you are creating and what you want to be and what is really authentically true about you. And begin to define yourself, design yourself, refine yourself according to ideas that create the image of yourself as the person you are really here to be.